close call. And by all means, if you do smoke, please join several groups to make up for the fact that you're, of the risk to your health of smoking. But there are many other examples of the power of social capital, not just the health of our bodies and the health of our public institutions, but also our economy depends, is improved by the by social networks. There are powerful effects on evolution. There are now increasing studies of the effects of social networks in evolutionary biology, pre-human evolutionary biology. There is a study of a race of tiny deer on an island in the North Atlantic, north of the Hebrides, and it turns out that little deer who have more friends live longer. I have no idea why friends are valuable to deer, but that's what the biologists tell us. I'm only scratching the surface. I'm only just describing a few of the many, many ways in which social networks, social capital, have important values, has important effects. And therefore, it's important to ask, what are the main developments in society more broadly that will affect social capital? And one of those possible effects, and I know we're going to talk about this later, so I'm going to be brief here in my own views, is the arrival of the internet. The internet, at least in principle, could be an important supplement to social capital. The internet is a net, is a network. So in some sense, of course, it could be a species of social capital. But the deeper empirical question is, will the internet make the problem of social capital and declining social capital, because in many parts of the world, including my own country, social capital is declining, will the internet make that problem better or make that problem worse? And the answer is yes. It will make it better and make it worse. It's important to distinguish, before I say more about the internet, I want to distinguish between two different kinds of social capital. Networks that link you to people like you. The jargon for social scientists is to talk about bonding social capital. So my ties, my connections, my relationships with other elderly, white, male, Jewish professors, that's my bonding social capital. And my ties to people of a different generation or a different social class or a different religion or a different gender, that's bridging social capital. I'm not saying bridging good, bonding bad, because if you get sick, the people who bring you chicken soup are likely to reflect your bonding social capital. So bonding social capital is not bad. But in a modern, diverse democracy, bridging social capital is very, very valuable. And what makes the problem more challenging is that bridging social capital is harder to build than bonding social capital. My grandmother knew that. My grandmother used an expression in English. I don't know if there's a similar expression in Italian. My grandmother used the expression, birds of a feather flock together. Is there a similar expression in Italian? That is, birds that have the same color are more likely to be together. What my grandmother meant was bridging social capital is harder to build than bonding social capital, but she didn't think I would understand the social science jargon. So my main point is there are different kinds of social capital. Bridging social capital is especially important, and we need to pay attention to bridging social capital. And with respect to the internet, there has been for the last 20 years a debate about which is better, virtual social capital, that is internet connections, electronic connections, or real, that is face-to-face connections. And there's been much, much debate about that. But I think that debate is mistaken, because I think nowadays in modern society, most of our real connections with other people are simultaneously real, face-to-face, and virtual, electronic. For example, Email. Take the simplest case, email. Email is an old-fashioned technique, I recognize that, but some of you will remember email. My daughter is a historian of Latin America. For many years, she lived in the jungle in Costa Rica, and I was living in the jungle in New England, and I was writing, and she was writing. I'm a night person, meaning a night owl, and she is a night owl. And so many times in the middle of the night, we would exchange email, even though she was half a world away. And I'm certain that our connections are stronger because of that email. I did not meet my daughter on the internet. I mean by that, there's a real relationship, her. This is not just a casual, purely virtual relationship. It's a real relationship, too. And that captures the fact that these networks often are simultaneously virtual and real. And in the area of metallurgy, we use the expression alloy. I don't know what the word alloy...
Lega.
Huh?
Lega.
Alloy, Lega is alloy. Okay. We use the expression alloy to refer to a mixture of two different metals. So if you put together copper and tin, you get, what is it, a bronze? I've forgotten what. I don't remember what you get. But you get a different metal with different properties than either pure copper or pure tin. And most networks in the modern world today are alloys. That is partly real and partly face-to-face. And the really interesting question is different alloys, different mixtures of real and face-to-face connections. I want to talk about Facebook, which is among the alloys. I talk about Facebook because, actually, I am one of the oldest users of Facebook on the earth. Because Facebook was invented by a student at Harvard named Mark Zuckerberg. Zuckerberg, you all know that. Who was a roommate of a student taking my class, my little seminar. So the 12 people in my seminar were a beta tester for Facebook. I have to assure you, I did not appear in the movie, and I did not get any stock. But I've been using Facebook. If Facebook members had numbers, I would be 0006. And originally, Facebook was one kind of alloy, because initially, Facebook was located at Harvard, and all of my friends on Facebook were real people that I really knew in my students. I saw them every week. So the connections with them were partly electronic and partly real. But now, about 10 years ago, Facebook changed its business model so that you could become a friend. You know the verb, to friend. You could friend anybody in the world. And if you're at all visible, I happen to be a little bit visible, every day I get requests from complete strangers asking me to be their friend. Hans from Berlin asked me last night to be his friend. I don't know Hans. I have no idea what Hans wants. I don't even know what gender Hans is. He says he wants to be my friend, but does that mean if I fly to Berlin today, he will be waiting with flowers at the airport for me? A friend would be. If I get sick, will Hans bring me chicken soup? I don't know. The fact that Hans has 2,000 friends on Facebook makes me a little dubious that he intends this to be a close friendship. He thinks of me as a trophy. He would like to have me listed on his list of friends. Why am I talking about Hans? Because it's now clear there's a difference between a friend and a friend. Is that clear? And there's really some interesting, very interesting new research by an economist at the University of British Columbia, John Helliwell, who's compared the effect of your friends and your friends. Friends, fra virgolette, per dire Facebook friends. We know, it's well established, that each additional friend that you have, real friend that you have, will increase your happiness and life satisfaction. So having one friend is better than zero friends for your life satisfaction. Two friends is better than one friend. Three friends is better than two friends. 12 friends is better than 11 friends. The graph looks like this. Each additional friend, you become happier. And therefore, I assume everybody in Bologna, high social capital, is delightfully happy. But Helliwell also studied the effect of your friends, your Facebook friends, on your happiness. And that line is perfectly flat. One friend on Facebook doesn't have any, you're not any happier than zero friends. 200 friends on Facebook does not make you happier than 100 friends. 2,000 friends on Facebook actually makes you slightly less happy. What am I trying to say? I'm trying to say that I'm not anti the internet. I'm not. But I'm trying to say that we have to think about different kinds of networks for different purposes. And what I worry about, there are many advantages to the internet, many, many advantages, but I worry that, and I'm going to just make this point and then leave it to my colleagues to respond to it, I worry that internet connections in general disproportionately strengthen bonding social capital. We're more likely to connect with other people on the internet who are like us. We all of my friends in America go to the same websites for their news. All us liberals talk to one another. We don't ever talk to a conservative. I would never think of talking to interacting with a conservative. But the point I'm trying to make is to wonder whether actually the internet strengthens bonding social capital, but weakens bridging social capital. That's a one-sentence summary of a much more complicated debate. Because I want to use the remaining couple of minutes here to talk about, actually, I think there are two other big factors in the environment, not just the internet and its effects. Powerful as that is, and will be, there are two other big factors that are happening everywhere, certainly in the United States, but also in Europe, and including in Italy. And that is, first of all, the growth of ethnic diversity. The growth of ethnic diversity, especially from immigration, is inevitable. And from my point of view, basically positive. But whether it's positive or not, people in Europe sometimes think, you know, well, we could stop the immigration. That's just not true. It will not happen. And I'm happy to have discussions about that. But I think it's just inevitable. If I were sitting in Europe, and I am willing to bet you all, anyone in the audience, a really wonderful dinner in Bologna, and there's nothing more valuable in the world than a dinner in Bologna, that if we all return here in 20 years and walk the streets of Bologna, the streets of Bologna will be more ethnically diverse than they are now. And basically, as an American, probably you're not surprised. I think that's great. I think diversity is very valuable for social functioning in the long run. But in the short run, diversity, our research shows, hurts social capital by making, in the short run, I want to make sure I emphasize this. I'm talking about the short run, the first couple of years. It makes us all act like turtles. We pull in from everybody. So it lowers social capital, both bonding and bridging social capital. And a successful immigration society, which the United States is, we have lots of problems, but the United States, it does know over the long run how to become an immigration society. A successful immigration society is one that knows how to become different. And by that I mean the challenge in Europe now, people talk about the challenge of ethnic diversity and the challenge of immigration as being, how can we make them, the Somalis or Afghans or Syrians, or become like us, the real Italian, or the real German, or the true Finn. And that's the wrong way of thinking about the problem. The problem of an immigration society is not to make them like us, but to create a new, more composite us. And I believe that's possible. Indeed, I think if I were active in regional government in Emilia-Romagna, looking for the next 20 years, this issue of ethnic diversity and how to change our sense of identity here to become a more capacious sense of we. We means not just we, Emiliani or Bolognese, but we, people who live here, including people who don't look like traditional Bolognese. When the Italians moved to the United States, the first reaction of Americans was to be very upset. All these Italians who were coming in, and moreover, they were Catholic, which was even worse. And gradually, the challenge was not to make those Italians like us, to make them become Protestants and make them become grave and serious and pale. The problem was to change what America meant. And so when after a period of adjustment, we had a more capacious sense of we, which included Italian Americans, we didn't think of Frank Sinatra as, oh, he's an Italian. He's an Italian American. And Joe DiMaggio. Joe DiMaggio is a baseball player. He was very famous. He was the first major Italian baseball player, but people didn't think of him as the Italian baseball player who happens to be in America. He was an Italian American. In English, in American English, it's completely plausible to say, it just sounds normal to say someone's an Italian American or a Jewish American or a Somali American. And until it becomes completely natural to say of someone that she's a Somali Italian, I recognize how odd that sounds now. But until that becomes possible, it will be difficult. And social and ethnic diversity will be not an advantage, as I think it will be, but a threat to social capital. So that's the first challenge beyond the internet. And I'm conscious of the time, so I'll be very brief about the second. And that is the growth of economic inequality, social and economic inequality. You'll forgive me because this is the subject of a book I have just finished in English, in America. It's a book that's had a good, I would say modestly, a lot of resonance. It's a bestseller in America, and it's been cited and read by most of the major candidates for president. President Obama invited me to spend 2 hours at the White House talking about the book, and the conservatives have also, they don't like every aspect of the book, but they like parts of it. And it is, so I'm not trying to sell books here, but I'm trying to say this book, the new book called Our Kids, is a book about the fact that America is becoming deeply divided in social economic inequality, and not merely there are more very rich people and more very poor people. That's not only it. It's that America is increasingly segregated by social class. We are less segregated racially, less segregated religiously, but more segregated by class. More and more of Americans are living either in rich neighborhoods with only rich friends and their children only going to school with other rich kids and marrying only other rich people, or living in poor neighborhoods with only other poor people, and their kids going to school only with other poor kids, and them only marrying other poor people, if they get married at all. That image of America is one that I think is deeply disturbing, not just the inequality, but the fact that there's much less bridging social capital than there used to be in America. Now, maybe that's only America. Maybe this growth of inequality and class division is a uniquely American problem. And at the moment, I'm only worrying about America. I have enough problems with America. But as I've traveled to Europe in the last, and I'm living in Europe this whole fall, I was in Finland just last week talking to Finnish leaders, including the Finnish president. And to my shock, tiny Finland is feeling the pressures of growing inequality, as well as, of course, the pressures of growing ethnic diversity. And this sounds terrible now. I apologize for this. Last week, I was at number 10 Downing Street talking to the prime minister's advisors about the same problem in Britain. And I don't know about economic inequality in Italy, whether there is growing economic inequality in Italy. But, and I'm now finishing, I believe that is a major macro trend that could have powerful implications on social capital in Emilia-Romagna. That's what I'm not talking about America now. I'm talking about what do I see as the major factors, big factors, that are likely to affect. So what is, after all, the crucial, if my understanding of Emilia-Romagna is right, the high level of social capital, traditionally, classically high level of social capital in Emilia-Romagna, is one of the most precious assets that this region has. And so I think the internet may have some effects on that, and I'm eager to hear about that. But I'm more worried, honestly, about the effects here of growing ethnic diversity and growing economic inequality. And if I were a regional official here, I'd be spending at least as much time thinking about how to adapt to those changes as I would about the internet. But now I've tried to be provocative to my colleagues.
Grazie mille, professor Putnam.